Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Brian McCullough, Assistant Professor of Sport Administration and Leadership at Seattle University, where he serves as the coordinator of the new Sport Sustainability Leadership Graduate Specialization and Certificate Program. He's also the founder of Forwarding Sport Sustainability, LLC, a consulting business helping sport organizations understand sports spectator environmental behaviors and attitudes, design their environmental messaging and narrative for internal and external stakeholders, and increase fan engagement with the sport organization's sustainability initiatives. He's dedicated to integrating sustainability into the sporting experience. It's great to have you here with me today, Brian.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity.
Okay, yeah, no, it's always good to have a wide range of people with different perspectives, so I'm glad we could get you here. Before we start off, is there anything I missed, anything interesting about you that we can better get to know you?
I'm originally from San Jose, California. I've kind of bounced around the country, did my undergraduate degree in sport management at Ithaca College in upstate New York, where I played baseball there, Division III school. And then I went home after I graduated and did some fundraising in the nonprofit sector in San Francisco, working for the main fundraising arm for the San Francisco AIDS Foundation, and then ran down to Texas for my graduate degree at Texas A&M. I got my master's and my PhD in sport management, completing my hat trick in sport management degrees. And then that's where I really became interested in sport and the intersection of sport and sustainability. And this was an emerging area within the research, and it gave me an opportunity to really be on the forefront of that. And me and my colleagues who have published in this area have been kind of hopefully leading the way to demonstrate the importance of this line of research.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I think this is an interesting topic for this podcast. I think when people think about sports, not a lot of people think about sustainability. So I'm interested to see how those two things intersect, like you were saying, and what you and other people are doing to increase, you know, visibility and awareness of that. So why don't we start off on a basic level? What does sustainability mean? I think some people might not be super familiar with that term.
Right. So primarily it's been used as or defined as, you know, ensuring the need of future generations and ensuring that natural resources are there. We can see, you know, COP21 starting up here soon and the discussions for climate change and global warming from a different perspective, and where we've really integrated this into the certificate program here at Seattle U, but also kind of following along with the Jesuit Ignatian paradigm for teaching, is really taking a full view of sustainability. So that means the environmental, economic, and social side of things. And, you know, when we look at these different aspects, you know, you are taking into account the natural resources that you have, the financial resources, and then also the human resources, which are extremely important. And then when you look at human resources, you also can see that the sport industry is unique, especially as it relates to the social side, because of all the social issues that emerge and are played out. We see that, you know, more recently in Missouri, but also, you know, other aspects that the product itself is an experience, but the thing about the sport product is that it's being played out by human beings. So there's an innate social aspect to it. Then, of course, when you look at the business practices, you have obviously people that are working for your organization too that you need to consider. So, you know, we go beyond the simple scope of looking at environmental sustainability and really see how economic and social play into that as well, and creating a balance between all three aspects to ensure that, you know, we're recognizing everyone's innate dignity, but also recognizing that, you know, the natural resources that we have around us are limited, even though they may not be perceived that way, they are limited. And then also being responsible with our economic resources as well to ensure efficiency, but also making sure that our dollar is going to support things that are, you know, just and moral.
Okay. So thanks for that overview. Now, again, before we get too deep into this, I can imagine some people saying, you know, sustainability, whatever, environmentalism, that's great. You know, call your congressman, call your city hall representative, have them put out recycling bins or whatever. This has nothing to do with sports. So how would you respond to that? Why does sustainability in sports matter?
Right. So the example you provide, recycling bins, and a lot of my research is actually focused on how to increase sustainable behaviors, in particular recycling and composting at sporting events. And that is definitely an important aspect of a sport organization's efforts. It's very visible, and it's relatively easy to implement simply because a lot of major metropolitan areas will have recycling programs already in place. But beyond that, when we talk to sport organizations, whether from a consulting standpoint or helping them conduct research or just approaching them to start thinking about integrating more sustainability practices into their business, we take an economic approach, and that if your organization can be more efficient, then you're actually saving money. So the prime example that we use is here in Seattle. The Mariners have been very progressive on the forefront of the leading trends within sport and sustainability. And a lot of things that they did were in-house and not visible to fans on a regular basis. And granted, a sport organization might not promote that just simply because fans don't see it, but it's a way that they can be more efficient in the way that they run their business, but then also save at the bottom line. And, you know, simple examples of adding insulation, understanding how rooms are being used, so does a light need to be on all the time? And those things add up over time in improving lighting, HVAC units. Electric efficiency can really help a lot to the bottom line. And, you know, one of the best stories was shared at a symposium that we had last week hosted by the Green Sport Alliance. And they showed that if they were to implement electric savings and implement a recycling and composting program, that this NFL team would actually save enough money in the first 2 years of what would equate to a entry-level rookie contract. And that sold the ownership on that standpoint. And so, I mean, it goes beyond simply the interactive nature that sport has to look at it as a business organization and really see the efficiency that can be achieved. But then also the non-political nature of a sporting event can start influencing sport fans to carry over their game day behaviors into their everyday behaviors as well at home.
Okay, yeah, no, that you've talked about a couple interesting things there, because I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, implementing, you know, social or economic or environmental changes, that's going to cost teams or that's going to cost leagues or whatever money. But what you're saying is that potentially the incentive is there to actually become more efficient in your use of resources, and that this can actually be a way to increase profitability.
Right, yes.
Okay, and then just another example from my personal life. I just went to a Miami Heat game the other day, and I noticed that the arena has banners for NBA championships, retired jerseys, and then there's one that says that the arena, American Airlines Arena, is LEED certified. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and I was thinking, wow, big arena. I don't know that much about what LEED certified means, but I know it's something about energy efficiency. And I was curious what that means in an arena. I imagine the air conditioning and things like that is not very efficient at using energy, but I was thinking maybe they're just trying to look good to people, but maybe what it does is it's just a more efficient way of using their resources to whatever it is, air conditioning or lighting or whatever, and it ends up being a net positive economically for them.
Right, and you know, the arenas are starting that are being built now. It almost seems as though it's a competition, which is a great thing to see. You know, what new environmental efficiencies can be implemented into the construction. And granted, the LEED certification looks at the planning, construction process, but then also the operation aspects of it. So you're right in the aspects of, you know, increased efficiency when it comes to electric, HVAC units, and the management itself of the building. And that can include, you know, there's points that buildings can achieve by having charging stations or preferred parking for low emission vehicles and different things like that. But then also, you know, simple things that people may not think about, of low flow toilet, which, you know, can be a huge money saver as well for the organization. And there is that upfront cost, but in the long run, you start to see that return on investment is becoming, you know, a shorter time period to really achieve those economic benefits as well as the environmental efficiencies. And then one other, you know, perfect example is the Mercedes-Benz stadium that's opening in Atlanta. The hope there is that they'll actually achieve platinum level for LEED certification, which is the highest level that you can achieve and has never been done before in a sporting venue. And the ways that they are able, or the ways that they're really maximizing their points is really understanding where the resources are being sourced from. And you really are trying to limit the proximity to where the resources that are going into the stadium are actually coming from. And so they're able to source a lot of their materials really close by to the construction site, which dramatically decreases the environmental impact of the construction project itself. And then the various aspects that they're implementing into the facility are at the forefront. So you can look at, you know, new facilities that have opened up. Levi's Stadium, you know, they're promoting themselves as the most environmentally efficient facility that's out there. You know, and then they stole that title away from Cowboys Stadium in Dallas. And then now, once the Falcon Stadium opens up, that will be the most efficient and most environmentally friendly stadium. And then once you probably, if you get a stadium in Los Angeles, I would imagine that they would start touting that they have the most efficient, just because of all the technological and innovative improvements that have emerged through that process.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's interesting that different arenas are kind of competing to do this, and I'm sure that has good effects in finding the best situation. I want to return to something that you said earlier. You were talking about how the non-political nature of sporting events has benefits by incorporating sustainability that can lead to encouraging people to change their mindsets or whatever, their attitudes towards sustainability. I'm wondering how else you think that sustainability relates to the fan experience in sports.
So yeah, that's a very important aspect to consider. We've been trying to find that balance between the fan experience and then also being as environmentally friendly as possible, just because a good portion of an organization's environmental impact will come from the fans' impact itself for attending the game, their transportation to the game and different things like that. And so even in areas like Seattle, tonight we have a Seahawks game, and a majority of the people don't have access to the light rail that will bring them to the game. And so it's really kind of educating fans about the opportunities and really highlighting the benefits to them. So convenience, you know, time savings, money savings for not having to pay for parking, not having to deal with traffic, different things like that. But it is difficult to tell fans that they should change their behavior, especially since people are so ritualized in their pregame superstitions that they have. And some may work, some may not. Who knows? That's why they're superstitions. But it is difficult to get them to change their behavior. But once you start implementing different programs, and the Portland Trailblazers are a great example of this, that every year they have a new campaign that kind of scaffolds out their environmental progress that they're trying to make. And granted, Portland's a much more progressive city than, you know, other cities, particularly in the South, that may not be as open to this, but it's become part of the organizational culture, and by way of that, part of the fan culture. So you can kind of tap in and use fan identification in the association with the team. So now if the team says, you know, you should recycle more, you should consider the way that you transport yourself to the games. You should also consider maybe, you know, the sources of where you're getting your food that you're, you know, preparing during your tailgate and things like that, that can really, you know, be beneficial to the environment, but then also, you know, be leveraged through the fan identification. Just because when you attend a sporting event, the first thing on your mind may not be, oh, I have to recycle, or I have to buy locally sourced food for my tailgate. It's probably, you know, obviously all about attending that game and hoping and wishing and following your superstitions so that your team wins the game. But if we can, you know, leverage that association with the team, then it might be much more beneficial. But it is difficult to do that. When we were at Bowling Green State University, it's where I taught before I was at Seattle U, the sustainability director was starting a campaign to start educating fans about tailgating, because tailgating is the Wild West of sustainability. It's very difficult to control what people bring in to their tailgating areas, and as a result, it's difficult to sort out and educate people to sort out their trash to landfill, recycling, and compost if you have a three-stream or a two-stream recycling and compost system. But in the stadium, you can control what people bring in, so then all the things that you sell are either compostable or are recyclable. So in the tailgating area, what we were trying to do at Bowling Green State University was to kind of educate fans, like, okay, you know, you're going to drink beer. when you go to tailgate. Kind of that goes hand in hand with attending a sporting event. So it's like, if you're going to drink, why don't you get like a pony keg or a keg itself instead of bringing all these bottles, so we can actually, you know, educate you about waste reduction. You know, recycling rates are great. Composting rates are great. You know, diversion rates are awesome. But ultimately, what we want to get to is, you know, waste reduction, so that we're actually looking at smaller totals of landfill waste, recycling, and compost, because then that means that we're actually getting more efficient in our behaviors and in what we're purchasing itself. Now, granted, sport organizations may not be explicitly saying that, but that ultimately is what that ultimate goal would be.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, that's interesting, trying to find the way to make those changes. I know, you know, just in my experience, yeah, sports fans do tend to be set in their ways as what is good for sports. So, it's good to see that somebody's out there looking at ways to make those changes.
Right. And you can make a very basic business case. Generally, the waste management company that is in charge of taking away waste from a sport facility or tailgating areas, they will charge a sport organization or a university money to take away the landfill waste, because they aren't going to necessarily profit from that, and they have to pay fees for the landfill. So that cost gets brought over to the sport organization. But if you bring away compost and recycling, that company makes money off of it. So they aren't going to charge you to take away those materials. So it's, you know, a financial benefit to the sport organization to reduce the amount of landfill waste that gets taken away. And the San Francisco Giants, in the first year that they implemented a recycling and composting program, the organization saved $250,000. And so, I mean, granted, you have millions of people coming through the turnstiles, but that money adds up. That's getting close to the league minimum right there in the contract, if that's where the money gets diverted.
Well, yeah, no, that's really interesting. So thanks for sharing that. I think to conclude, and you've already touched on this a bit, but if you can just talk about kind of the sport industry in the past and in the present and in the future, and how sustainability has changed, and kind of what are the trends going forward that you can see among sports.
Right. So there's been an increased sophistication when it comes to implementing environmental sustainability and other social and economic sustainability aspects to the sport industry. And like I said before, recycling programs were probably the lowest hanging fruit. Those programs are easy to implement because of the infrastructure that cities have already. But then also it's the most visible to fans, so fans can see that their organization is making efforts to be environmentally sustainable. A lot of things are being done behind the scenes. Some teams think that they can't be environmentally sustainable until they get a new facility, or, you know, use that as the impetus for implementing these different aspects. However, you know, if you were to look at the inefficiencies within your organization, sometimes it can be, you know, improved, and as such, you can implement environmental sustainability initiatives into it. Or it could be simply as changing the type of cup that you use as your souvenir cup. You know, at A&M, it was, when I was there, it was simple procurement change of using recycle 5 plastic versus recycling 3 plastics. And, I mean, it's a simple change like that of what the cup was made out of. It's the same customer experience, but, you know, they're never going to notice that it's a different plastic unless you look underneath and see the different symbol. What we currently see in organizations now is a deeper commitment to environmental sustainability. This isn't just a one-off thing. It's a continual improvement that needs to happen. So it's, you know, it's a financial, but it's also a strategic commitment that needs to be made. And the example I gave of the Portland Trailblazers, they continue to roll out new campaigns, and they're on the forefront. Teams are trying to reduce and offset their carbon emissions that they emit during their games, but also during the travel. We see that as a commitment by the NHL currently. And we're also starting to see organizations like the NHL, but other individual organizations starting to produce their environmental sustainability reports that kind of talk about their improvements that they've made, their commitments. So it's a public display of their commitment to environmental sustainability. And a lot of the future trends will, again, be, you know, going deeper and really looking at food recovery, also the social aspects of, you know, how do we start to promote and sell healthier foods, maybe foods that are more locally sourced. Major League Baseball, a lot of different teams, including the Red Sox, which had an NBC News special about their Fenway Gardens. So they're starting to have urban gardens, and that food is used in the preparation for in-stadium food. So it's kind of an educational component, but then also, you know, another way that teams can show how people, but also how organizations can be sustainable. And so these commitments, again, are going to get deeper and deeper, and there's going to be community partners that will emerge, sponsorships that will start to emerge, like we saw in Seattle with the company that helped install the LED lights at Safeco Field. They were able to incorporate them into a sponsorship to further reduce the cost to the organization to install those lights. So again, it's getting more complex. And so there's the need to have an individual that's in charge of the sustainability initiatives within organizations so that you don't necessarily have a silo effect with different departments within the organization kind of doing their own thing, but that there is collaboration and synergy that can be used to forward and make a bigger push to really bring the organization leaps and bounds ahead and have a kind of a concerted effort amongst all the departments. And that's one of the things that we really try to focus on within the certificate program and our specialization in sports sustainability leadership, is to educate either people that are outside the sport industry that are trying to get in and have a sustainability background, or those that are in the sport industry who have been charged with the organization's environmental sustainability initiatives. And so we're teaching them how to, in a way, use theoretical foundations and data-driven decisions to manage this increasingly complex yet beneficial aspect to their organization's operations.
Okay, yeah, and it sounds like organizing these sustainability initiatives is only going to grow in importance as organizations are trying to find the most effective way to do things. So it's good that people like you are looking into this and trying to find ways to get better. So, well, great. Yeah, I think it's been a good discussion. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to leave us with before we head out here today?
Yeah, the last thing I would say is that if this is something that you're interested in implementing into your organization, there's a couple of things that you can do. One, check out our educational program here at Seattle University. Look for the Sports Sustainability Leadership Certificate. The other things that you can do is that if your organization is already doing certain things, that there are several of us out there that do research in this area, and we can really help your organization to make sure that it's using its economic resources appropriately in developing and implementing your environmental sustainability initiatives.
Okay. Well, sounds great. Hopefully somebody's listening to this podcast and interested in this, and they'll be able to get in contact with you. Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today and coming on the Sports Law Biz podcast.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIB Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.